The Ring and the Book by Robert Browning. Book 3. The Other Half Rome. Another day that finds her living yet, little Pompilia, with the patient brow and lamentable smile on those poor lips, and under the white hospital array a flower-like body to frighten at a bruise, you'd think, yet now stabbed through and through again, alive in the ruins. 'Tis a miracle. It seems that when her husband struck her first, she prayed Madonna, just that she might live so long as to confess and be absolved. And whether it was that all her sad life long, never before successful in a prayer, this prayer rose with authority too dread, or whether, because earth was hell to her, by compensation, when the blackness broke, she got one glimpse of quiet in the cool blue, to show her for a moment such things were. Or else, as the Augustinian brother thinks, the friar who took confession from her lip, when a probationary soul that moves from nobleness to nobleness, as she, over the rough way of the world, succumbs, bloodies its last thorn with unflinching foot, the angels love to do their work betimes, staunch some wounds here, nor leave so much for God. Who knows? However it be, confessed, absolved, she lies, with overplus of life beside, to speak and write herself from first to last. Write the friend also, lamb pure, lion brave, care for the boy's concerns, to save the son from the sire, her 2 weeks infant orphaned thus, and, with best smile of all reserved for him, pardon that sire and husband from the heart. A miracle! So tell your Molinists! There she lies in the long white Lazar house. Rome has besieged these 2 days, never doubt, St. Anna's, where she waits her death, to hear, though but the chink of the bell, turn of the hinge, when the reluctant wicket opes at last, lets in, on now this and now that pretense, too many by half, complain the men of art, for a patient in such plight. The lawyers first paid the due visit. Justice must be done. They took her witness why the murder was. Then the priests followed, properly, a soul to shrive. 'Twas Brother Celestine's own right, the same who noises thus her gifts abroad. But many more, who found they were old friends, pushed in to have their stare, and take their talk, and go forth boasting of it, and to boast. Old Monad Baldi chatters like a jay, swears, but that prematurely trundled out just as she felt the benefit begin. The miracle was snapped up by somebody. Her palsied limb grand prick and promise life at touch of the bedclothes merely. How much more had she but brushed the body as she tried? Cavalier Carlo. Well, there's some excuse for him. Murata, who paints virgins so. He too must fee the porter and slip by with pencil cut and paper squared and straight. There was he figuring away at face. A lovelier face is not in Rome, cried he, shaped like a peacock's egg, the purest pearl that hatches you anon a snow-white chick. Then, oh, that pair of eyes, that pendant hair, black this and black the other, mighty fine. But nobody cared ask to paint the same, nor grew a poet over hair and eyes, 4 little years ago, when ask and have, the woman who wakes all this rapture leaned flower-like from out her window long enough, as much uncomplimented as uncropped by comers and goers in Via Victoria. Eh? 'Tis just a flower's fate. Past parterre we trip, till peradventure someone plucks our sleeve. Yon blossom at the briar's end, that's the rose 2 jealous people fought for yesterday and killed each other. See? There's undisturbed a pretty pool at the root of rival red. Then cry we, ah, the perfect paragon! Then crave we, just one keepsake leaf for us. Truth lies between. There's anyhow a child of 17 years, whether a flower or weed, ruined. Who did it shall account to Christ. Having no pity on the harmless life and gentle face and girlish form he found, and thus flings back. Go practice, if you please, with men and women. Leave a child alone, for Christ's particular love's sake. So I say. Somebody at the bedside said much more, took on him to explain the secret cause of the crime. Quoth he, such crimes are very rife, explode nor make us wonder nowadays, seeing that Antichrist disseminates that doctrine of the philosophic sin. Molino's sect will soon make earth too hot. Nay, groaned the Augustinian, what's there new? Crime will not fail to flare up from men's hearts while hearts are men's, and so born criminal. Which one fact, always old yet ever new, accounts for so much crime that, for my part, Molinos may go whistle to the wind that waits outside a certain church, you know? Though really it does seem as if she here, Pompilia, living so and dying thus, has undue experience how much crime a heart can hatch. Why was she made to learn? Not you, not I, not even Molino's self. What Guido Franceschini's heart could hold. Thus saintship is affected, probably. No sparing saints the process. Which the more tends to the reconciling us, no saints, to sinnership, immunity, and all. For see now, Pietro and Violante's life, till 17 years ago, all Rome might note and quote for happy. See the signs distinct of happiness, as we yon Tritons trump. What could they be but happy? Balanced so, not low in the social scale, nor yet too high, nor poor, nor richer than comports with ease, nor bright and envied, nor obscure and scorned, nor so young that their pleasures fell too thick, nor old past catching pleasure when it fell. Nothing above, below, the just degree, all at the mean where joy's components mix. So again in the couple's very souls you saw the adequate half with half to match, each having and each lacking somewhat, both making a whole that had all and lacked naught, the round and sound, in whose composure just the acquiescence and recipient side was Pietro, and the stirring, striving one, Violante's. Both in union gave the due quietude, enterprise, craving, and content, which go to bodily health and peace of mind. But, as 'tis said, a body rightly mixed, each element in equipoise would last too long and live forever, accordingly, holds a germ, sand grain to weight too much in the scale, ordained to get predominance one day and so bring all to ruin and release. Not otherwise a fatal germ lurked here. With mortals much must go, but something stays. Nothing will stay of our so happy selves. Out of the very ripeness of life's core, a worm was bred. Our life shall leave no fruit. Enough of bliss, they thought, could bliss bear seed, yield its like, propagate a bliss in turn, and keep the kind up. Not supplant themselves, but put in evidence, record they were. Show them, when done with, in the shape of a child. 'Tis in a child man and wife grow complete, one flesh. God says so. Let him do his work. Now, one reminder of this gnawing want, one special prick of the maggot at the core, always befell when, as the day came round, a certain yearly sum, our Pietro being, as the long name runs, a usufructuary, dropped in the common bag as interest of money, his till death, not afterward, failing an heir. An heir would take and take, a child of theirs be wealthy in their place, to nobody's hurt. The stranger else seized all. Prosperity rolled river-like and stopped, making their mill go, but when wheel wore out, the wave would find a space and sweep on free, and half a mile off, grind some neighbor's corn. Adam-like, Pietro sighed and said no more. Eve saw the apple was fair and good to taste, so plucked it, having asked the snake advice. She told her husband God was merciful, and his and her prayer granted at the last. Let the old millstone molder, wheel unworn, quartz from the quarry, shot into the stream adroitly, should go bring grist as before. Their house continued to them by an heir, their vacant heart replenished with a child. We have her own confession at full length, made in the first remorse. 'Twas jubilee pealed in the ear of the conscience, and it woke. She found she had offended God, no doubt. So much was plain from what had happened since. Misfortune on misfortune. But she harmed no one in the world, so far as she could see. The act had gladdened Pietro to the height, her husband. God himself must gladden so, or not at all. Thus much seems probable from the implicit faith, or rather, say, stupid credulity of the foolish man who swallowed such a tale, nor strained a wit, even at his wife's far over 50 years, matching his 60 and under. Him she blessed, and as for doing any detriment to the veritable heir, why, tell her first, who was he? Which of all the hands held up in the crowd would one day gather round their gate? Did she so wrong by intercepting thus the ducat, spendthrift fortune thought to fling for a scramble, just to make the mob break shins? She kept it, saved them kicks and cuffs thereby, while at the least one good work had she wrought, good, clearly and incontestably. Her cheat, what was it to its subject, the child's self, but charity and religion? See the girl! A body, most like, a soul too, probably, doomed to death, such a double death as waits the illicit offspring of a common troll, sure to resent and forthwith rid herself of a mere interruption to sin's trade, in the efficacious way old Tiber knows. Was not so much proved by the ready sale of the child, glad transfer of this irksome chance? Well, then, she had caught up this castaway, this fragile egg, some careless wild bird dropped. She had picked from where it waited the footfall, and put in her own breast, till forth broke Finch, able to sing God praise on mornings now. What so excessive harm was done? She asked. To which demand the dreadful answer comes. For that same deed, now at Lorenzo's church, both agents, conscious and inconscious, lie. While she, the deed was done to benefit, lies also, the most lamentable of things, yonder where curious people count her breaths, calculate how long yet the little life unspilt may serve their turn, nor spoil the show. Give them their story, then the church its group. Well, having gained Pompilia, the girl grew in the midst of Pietro here, Violante there, each like a semicircle with stretched arms, joining the other round her preciousness. Two walls that go about a garden plot, where a chance sliver, branchlet slipped from bole of some tongue-leaved, eye-figured Eden tree, filched by two exiles and borne far away, patiently glorifies their solitude. Year by year mounting, grade by grade surmounts the builded brickwork, yet his compass still hidden happily and shielded safe. Else why should miracle have graced the ground? But on the 12th sun that brought April there, what meant that laugh? The coping stone was reached. Nay, a light tuft of bloom towered above, to be toyed with by butterfly or bee, done good to or else harm to from outside. Pompilia's root stem and a branch or two, home enclosed still, the rest would be the world's. All which was taught our couple, though obtuse, since walls have ears, when one day brought a priest, smooth-mannered, soft-speeched, sleek-cheeked visitor, the notable Abate Paolo, known as younger brother of a Tuscan house, whereof the actual representative, Count Guido, had employed his youth and age in culture of Rome's most productive plant, a cardinal. But years pass and change comes, in token of which here was our Paolo brought to broach a weighty business. Might he speak? Yes. To Violante, somehow caught alone, while Pietro took his after-dinner doze, and the young maiden, busily, as befits, minded her broider frame, three chambers off. So, giving now his great flap hat a gloss, with flat of the hand between whiles, soothing now the silk from out its creases o'er the calf, setting the stocking clerical again, but never disengaging, once engaged, the thin, clear, gray hold of his eyes on her. He dissertated on that Tuscan house, those Franceschini. Very old they were. Not rich, however. Oh, not rich, at least, as people look to be who, low in the scale, one way, have reason, rising all they can by favor of the money-bag. 'Tis fair. Do all gifts go together? But don't suppose that being not so rich means all so poor. Say, rather, well enough. In the way, indeed, to better fortune than the best, since, if his brother's patron friend kept faith, put into promised play the cardinalate, their house might wear the red cloth that keeps warm, would but the count have patience. There's the point, for he was slipping into years apace, and years make men restless. They needs must see some certainty, some sort of end assured, sparkle, though from the topmost beacon tip that warrants life a harbor through the haze. In short, call him fantastic as you choose. Guido was homesick, yearned for the old sights and usual faces, fain would settle himself and have the patron's bounty, when it fell, irrigate far rather than deluge near. Go fertilize Arezzo, not flood Rome. Sooth to say, 'twas the wiser wish. The count proved wanting in ambition. Let us avouch, since truth is best, in callousness of heart. Winced at those pinpricks whereby honors hang a ribbon o'er each puncture. His no soul ecclesiastic. Here the hat was brushed. Humble but self-sustaining, calm and cold, having, as one who puts his hand to the plough, renounced the over-vivid family feel. Poor brother Guido, all too plain, he pined amid Rome's pomp and glare for dinginess, and that dilapidated palace shell, vast as a quarry and very like as bare, since to this comes old grandeur nowadays. Or that absurd wild villa in the waste of the hillside. Breezy, though, for who likes air, Vitiano, nor unpleasant with its vines, outside the city in the summer heats. And now his harping on this one tense chord, the villa and the palace, palace this and villa the other, all day and all night creaked like the implacable cicada's cry and made one's eardrum ache. not else would serve, but that to light his mother's visage up with second youth, hope, gaiety again. He must find straightway, woo and haply win, and bear away triumphant back some wife. Well now, the man was rational in his way. He, the abate, ought he to interpose? Unless by straining still his tutelage, priesthood leaps over elder brothership, across this difficulty. Then let go, leave the poor fellow in peace. Would that be wrong? There was no making Guido great, it seems, spite of himself. Then happy be his dole. Indeed, the abate's little interest was somewhat nearly touched in the case they saw. Since if his simple kinsmen so were bent, began his rounds in Rome to catch a wife, full soon would such unworldliness surprise the rare bird, sprinkle salt on phoenix' tail, and so secure the nest a sparrow-hawk. No lack of mothers here in Rome, no dread of daughters lured as larks by looking-glass. The first name-pecking, credit-scratching fowl would drop her unfledged cuckoo in our nest to gather grayness there, give voice at length, and shame the brood. But it was long ago when crusades were, and we sent eagles forth. No, that at least the abate could forestall. He read the thought within his brother's word, knew what he purposed better than himself. We want no name and fame, having our own. No worldly aggrandizement, such we fly. But if some wonder of a woman's heart were yet untainted on this grimy earth, tender and true, tradition tells of such, prepared to pant in time and tune with ours. If some good girl, a girl, since she must take the new bent, live new life, adopt new modes, not wealthy, Guido for his rank was poor, but with whatever dowry came to hand, there were the lady love predestinate. And somehow the abate's guardian eye, scintillant, rutilant, fraternal fire, roving round every way, had seized the prize, the instinct of us, we the spirituality. Come, cards on table. Was it true or false that here in this very tenement, yea, Via Vittoria did a marvel hide, lily of a maiden, white with intact leaf guessed through the sheath that saved it from the sun? A daughter with the mother's hand still clasped over her head for fillet virginal, a wife worth Guido's house and hand and heart. He came to see, had spoken, he could no less, a final cherish of the stockinged cap. If harm were, well, the matter was off his mind. Then, with the great air did he kiss, devout, Violante's hand, and rise up his whole height, a certain purple gleam about the black, and go forth grandly, as if the Pope came next. And so Violante rubbed her eyes a while, got up too, walked to wake her Pietro soon, and pour into his ear the mighty news how somebody had somehow, somewhere seen their tree-top tuft of bloom above the wall, and came now to apprise them the tree's self was no such crab sort as should feed the swine, but veritable gold, the Hesperian ball ordained for Hercules to haste and pluck, and bear, and give the gods to banquet with. Hercules standing ready at the door. Whereon did Pietro rub his eyes in turn, look very wise, a little woeful too. Then, periwig on head and cane in hand, sally forth dignifiedly into the square of Spain, across Babuino the 6 steps, toward the boat fountain where our idlers lounge, ask for form's sake who Hercules might be and have congratulation from the world. Heartily laughed the world in his fool's face and told him Hercules was just the heir to the stubble once a cornfield and brick heap where used to be a dwelling place, now burned. Guido and Franceschini, a count. Hey, but a cross in the poke to bless the countship? No. All gone except sloth, pride, rapacity, humors of the imposthume incident to rich blood that runs thin, nursed to a head by the rankly salted soil. A cardinal's court where, parasite and picker-up of crumbs, he had hung on too long, and now let go, said some. But shaken off, said others. In any case, tired of the trade, and something worse for wear, was wanting to change town for country quick. Go home again. Let Pietro help him home. The brother, Abate Paolo, shrewder mouse, had pricked for comfortable quarters, inched into the core of Rome, and fattened so. But Guido, over burly for rat's hole suited to clerical slimness, starved outside, must shift for himself. And so the shift was this. What, was the snug retreat of Pietro tracked, the little provision for his old age snuffed? Oh, make your girl a lady an you list, but have more mercy on our wit than vaunt your bargain as we burgesses who brag. Why, goodman dullard, if a friend must speak, would the count, think you, stoop to you and yours, were there the value of one penny piece to rattle twixt his palms? Or likelier, laugh, bid your Pompilia help you black his shoe. Home again, shaking off the puzzled pate, went Pietro to announce a change indeed. Yet Point Violante, where some solace lay, of a rueful sort. The taper, quenched so soon, had ended merely in a snuff, not stink. Congratulate, there was one hope the less, not misery the more. And so an end. The marriage thus impossible, the rest followed. Our spokesman Paolo heard his fate. Resignedly Count Guido bore the blow. Violante wiped away the transient tear, renounced the playing Danae to gold dreams, praised much her Pietro's prompt sagaciousness, found neighbor's envy natural, lightly laughed at gossip's malice, fairly wrapped herself in her integrity three folds about, and letting pass a little day or two, threw even over that integrity another wrappage, namely, one thick veil that hid her, matron-wise, from head to foot, and by the hand, holding a girl veiled too, stood one dim end of a December day in St. Lorenzo on the altar-step. Just where she lies now, and that girl will lie. Only with 50 candles company now, in the place of the poor winking one which saw, door shut and sacristan made sure, a priest, perhaps Abate Paolo, wed Guido clandestinely, irrevocably, to his Pompilia, aged 13 years and 5 months, witnessed the church register. Pompilia, thus become Count Guido's wife, clandestinely, irrevocably his, who all the while had borne, from first to last, as brisk a part in the bargain as yon lamb, brought forth from basket and set out for sale, bears while they chaffer, wary market-man and voluble housewife o'er it, each in turn patting the curly, calm, inconscious head, with the shambles ready round the corner there, when the talk's talked out and a bargain struck. Transfer complete? Why, Pietro was apprised. Violante sobbed the sobs and prayed the prayers and said the serpent tempted so she fell, till Pietro had to clear his brow apace and make the best of matters. Wrath at first, How else? Pacification presently. Why not? Could flesh withstand the empurpled one, the very cardinal, Paolo's patron friend, who, justifiably surnamed a hinge, knew where the mollifying oil should drop to cure the creak of the valve? Considerate for frailty, patient in a naughty world. He even volunteered to supervise the rough draft of those marriage articles signed in a hurry by Pietro, since revoked. Trust politic. Suspicion does the harm. There is but one way to browbeat this world, dumbfounder doubt, and repay scorn in kind. To go on trusting, namely, till faith move mountains. And faith here made the mountains move. End of part 1 of book 3.